Hello and welcome to The Advance, conversations about news in the Mid-America Union Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I'm Pablo Colindres, Digital Media Manager at the MAUC. This week, I discussed the film Hacksaw Ridge with Dr. Charles Knapp, Chairman of the Desmond Doss Council. He discusses how the film became a reality and the overwhelming positive response from critics and viewers alike. All right, so I guess we can start with you introducing yourself, you know, who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Dr. Charles Knapp. I'm a retired physician. I spent a career in the military, so I'm a retired regular Army officer. And primarily in the operational Army with combat units. And my last duty assignment, I was in charge of all medical planning for the Middle East for the United States Central Command. I have been with the Desmond Doss Council by invitation since 2002, and for the last 11 years, I have chaired the council. And the council is an organization that was put together at Desmond Doss's request when he was putting his estate plan together with the Georgia Cumberland Conference Association back in the late 90s. And the Doss Council was formed for the purpose of overseeing the making of a documentary of his life. Mm-hmm. The council was formed in 2002 and has been in existence ever since.
Yeah, and did you know Desmond Doss personally?
I did. I first met him in 1954 when I was attending a pre-draft induction medical cadet corps camp at Grand Ledge, Michigan. The camp was called Camp Desmond Doss, and he came to give the graduation address. Of course, I didn't get to meet him intimately at that time, but I was introduced to him, and he gave the graduation address.
Right.
And then over the years, I think because of the leading of the Lord, I didn't understand it at the time, why our paths crossed. Of course, you know that he was very active in promoting character development among young people, mm-hmm. especially middle schoolers. And so I had had that opportunity. Then in the late 60s, I received a set of orders from the Department of the Army that I was to give the graduation address at the Medical Cadet Corps camp at Grand Ledge. Normally, this was a honor reserved for senior Army medical officers, full colonels. I was only a major at that time. But for my graduation address, I told his abbreviated story to the cadets that were there. Mm-hmm. And in Vietnam, in 1965, a man who had worked for me was in one of my my medical platoons with the 82nd Airborne Division. He, in November of 1965, he, as a medic, received the Medal of Honor, and his name was Lawrence Joel, mm-hmm. not an Adventist. I also included a short synopsis of his story in that graduation address. And then it seemed like from then on, if there was anything related to Doss in the U.S. Army or Doss in the church, on a why somehow or another I always seem to find myself involved. And I guess that's the reason I was asked to join the Desmond Doss Council. I was retired then.
Right.
All of the Doss Council are volunteers. Most of them have stayed with the Doss Council for all these years since 2000, myself, and since 2002. And of course, we've done a fair amount of work to maintain his legacy.
Right, yeah, and I've seen the documentary, and like you said, it was the foundation was set up to set up the documentary. When did the film first, you know, started taking shape? When was the first time when a film became more than just an idea?
Well, first we produced the documentary, and it was published in 2004. Mm-hmm. It's been shown on television about 16 times. It's gone all over the world. And about the same time, Desmond, who was alive at that time and attended most of the production meetings in the 2003-2004 timeframe, began to warm to the idea that it might be possible to produce a
film,
public theatrical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had actually been approached many times by Hollywood directors and producers in the 70s and early 80s. He actually had signed a couple of rights agreements, but then had vacated those agreements because they were fictionalizing the story or dramatizing it in a way that he felt was not accurate or truthful or didn't represent his beliefs or the church in a fair and truthful manner.
Got it.
So he was very skeptical of Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
probably well-placed.
Yeah.
Through contacts by Terry Benedict, who was the director and producer of the documentary, The Conscientious Objector, the story found its way through several key Hollywood people and finally was presented to Pandemonium Films, Mr. Bill Mechanic. Bill Mechanic is a highly accredited producer. He was formerly president and CEO of 20th Century Fox and had gone out and formed his own independent production company. And he immediately grasped the story. He understood it, had developed a vision of where the story could go. He teamed with Walden Media. Their production company is Bristol Bay Productions, and they've done such things as Pirates of the Caribbean and Charlotte's Web and Amazing Grace and some other very, very fine films.
Right.
And that's the way it started in the mid 2005, 2006. After about a year of negotiations, why we had a rights agreement for Pandemonium Films and Walden Media with Bill Mechanic producing. That collapsed because there was difficulty in getting funding. And when the national economy slumped in 2007-2008, why Walden did not purchase another extension on the rights agreement, and so it just expired. And so we kind of started all over again.
Mm.
It languished for several months, actually pretty close to a year, and we approached Mr. Mechanic and told him that we would like to move ahead as long as we could use the same rights agreement with other entities, and that he was the producer. That was one of our requirements.
Right.
We signed another rights agreement. He found funding. That was a very tumultuous period, probably 8 years at least, for Mr. Mechanic, because he believed so strongly in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But studios were very reluctant to participate, and film financing corporations thought it was too religious and And then almost miraculously, in 2015, the Australian government had been approached by Mr. Mechanic, and they offered some very excellent incentives, financial incentives, tax incentives, and so on, if the film could be made in
Australia.
I had a meeting with Mr. Mechanic along with our representative in Hollywood, an Adventist by the name of Mr. Gabe Vidella, who was the executive producer on the documentary. And we hammered out some agreements, mostly verbal, on where we were going to go with this. And in the space of about 24 hours, Mr. Mechanic was able to get a confirmation from Mel Gibson that he would direct the film. Other directors had been engaged and then left the project when the funding wasn't there and they had conflicts, other pictures to produce. Right. As a testament to the quality of the rights agreement, it was not changed as far as its content. And we had had a lot of input during the development of the rights agreement as to what was acceptable in the film, what was not, how the church was to be represented, how his beliefs were to be represented. And from my point of view, Mr. Mechanic, Mel Gibson, not only held to the letter of what we had wanted, but they went way beyond. It was very, very important to them that there be nothing in the film that the extended Doss family, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, those that knew Doss personally, and especially the Doss Council, would find either offensive or inaccurate or distorted.
Right.
And I think they've done a very good job. There has been dramatization and some...
to some extent, yeah.
Yes, and because trying to present the battle, which is featured in the film, and it took place over a period of about 3 days, that particular battle, and trying to do it in 45 minutes or less, actually is missing some of the elements that are so well known to Seventh-day Adventists, some of the miraculous events, and they were left out simply because
time.
Either there wasn't time or Mel Gibson felt that if we put them in, especially the episode about Desmond's wounding, which is there, the scene is very short and did not actually happen on the 5th of May. His wounding occurred on the 21st of May during another assault up the escarpment. However, the events are accurate. They are, I think, appropriately portrayed, and there has to be some license to get the story across.
Right, definitely. I wanted to talk about also the fact that it's been nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including best actor, best director, and all that. You had some time where you went over to Australia, yes?
I spent probably 10 or 12 hours during the time that I was over standing behind Mr. Gibson in the directorial tent, dozens of hours out on the set. I was denied nothing. In fact, it was important to the producer, and they hosted me to come over there, is to make certain that I was satisfied that the representations that they were doing of the events in Doss were accurate. And partly, to some extent, because of my 29 years of military service, but also because of the relationship that the Doss Council had developed with Mr. Mechanic and his staff. The church nor the Doss Council had any creative input into the movie. The movie wasn't made for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It didn't require the approval of the Seventh-day Adventist Church or the Doss Council. However, having said that, the producers and Mel Gibson wanted the approval of the church and the Doss Council because they represented the story as a true story. So my visit over there, I spent time with all of the cast. I was over there during the filming of the battle scenes, and it was pretty intense. It was, I come to understand the enormous amount of energy, effort by a lot of professionals who worked very hard to make it to work. They filmed 12 hours a day, and at the end of my last day there, there were 450 people out on the set. I had lunch with Mr. Mechanic and Mel Gibson and some others in the mess tent. Mel Gibson was sitting across the table and really not conversing with me. He was conversing with other people. They got up and he sat there, and all of a sudden he slammed the table with his fist, not his fist, but an open palm, and said, "Well, Charles," he knew I was leaving. He said, what do you think? And I said, "Sir?" He said, "You know what I mean. How am I doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm not certain that I am the proper person to ask that." And he says, "Well, yes, you well are." I said, "I think you're doing fine." I said, I said, "I'm a visual person, and I'm putting it together in my mind how these pieces all, and I think what I've seen, what I've experienced, talking to Andrew Garfield at some length, I think you're spot on." He said, "Good, that's important." He slapped the table again and walked off. That's not the last time I saw him, but it was an affirmation to me that our approval was important. And the three of us were some of the first to see the very first director's cut in early 2016. And we were in Mr. Mechanic's screening room in Beverly Hills. And I noted immediately that one of the credit lines, they had Desmond buried in Arlington, and I told him, and he says, "Yeah, I know, Charles." He says, "I caught that too," because his titling people had put that in. And the next time we saw the film, it was gone. It had been changed. The very first time the film, the director's cut, was shown to a public group was done by Lionsgate at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. And it received an overwhelming, enthusiastic response. And those early director's cuts were pretty rough. Scenes weren't complete. There was a lot of uneven sound. The coloration wasn't entirely correct. Mm-hmm. And there was also some unscripted profanity that would definitely be offensive to church members, but they would be offensive to faith groups around the country.
Right, and the actors did that to make it more authentic, you think, or?
No. You have to understand there were 130 Japanese extras and almost 100 American extras that were the soldiers that are depicted in there, plus stuntmen and everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the intensity of those battle scenes, and they're all young people, and the F-bomb and using the Lord's name in vain is almost part of the youthful lexicon. To get with it, they just went, most of them didn't have any speaking narrative, but it was there. We could hear it in the background.
Right.
I wrote a short note to Mr. Mechanic, and less than a week later, he says, thank you. He said, we noted it too, and all of those words have been removed.
Mm-hmm.
And as I went around the country with Lionsgate representative, I participated in 22 showing, advanced showings. The Lionsgate marketing people would tell the audiences about that, and there was universal approval and increased respect for the filmmakers for doing that. It wouldn't have made any difference to cynical...
to your average moviegoer, yeah.
Yeah, or to the critics, but to the faith community, when it was all finished, I think there were 44 or 46 advanced showings to primarily faith groups, mm-hmm. veterans. It would have made a big difference to them. And so we did participate. It wasn't part of the rights agreement. We've had a very, very intimate
role in
involvement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was about showing number 18, and the audience started clapping during the credits and found out that they had put my name on the credits, and I did not know that they weren't required to do that. It came as a total surprise to me, and it was up near the front of the credits, and I took it as an honor, but what I thought is, again, the Lord participated in allowing us to have that kind of relationship with the filmmakers in a way that we got absolutely the very best product, I think, that it was possible to get, considering the funding, the time, the people involved.
Right.
And I've talked to practically every member of the extended DOS family, including Desmond Jr. They are all very complimentary. And those of them that knew DOS when he was in his 20s, that Andrew Garfield could be Desmond's twin brother. Hmm. He really captured the essence of who Desmond was. I think he would be very, very, very deserving of the honor of the best actor for the Oscars.
Yeah. You said you talked to him while you were in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was the conversation like?
Well, he asked me lots of more intimate details about DOS.
Mm-hmm.
In preparation for the film, Terry Benedict toured him for about 3 weeks to all of DOS's home sites and his haunts up on Lookout Mountain, in Lynchburg, mm-hmm. and the other places where he had lived. Andrew made the comment, he says, I wanted to walk in Desmond's shoes. So he would ask me about events in Desmond's life.
Right.
And I said, well, the best I could do is relate them to what I had heard Desmond say about those events. I felt like I kind of knew the DOS story as well as anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But he also asked about Desmond's faith. And I think it was from those conversations and then the actor's personal involvement in the storyline gave rise to some comments that both Mel and Andrew Garfield have made publicly. When asked, isn't this film religious? And they said, They started out in the early interviews to say, yes, there is a religious component. They don't say that anymore. And I don't think it's a marketing ploy. I think they really believe it. I know that Mel does. He said the events that transpired in this movie and are portrayed are beyond religion. Desmond did what he did because that's what he believed. He didn't hide behind the church. He didn't use the church as an excuse. He talked about his mother's nurturing, the influence of her in the family, about his early reading of the Bible. You have to remember, Desmond only had an eighth grade education.
Wow.
And while he was not educated in the traditional sense, he knew what he believed. And there's a scene where he's in the jail cell awaiting
trial.
His court-martial. Yeah. Or actually, that wasn't the court-martial. That was it was a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's portrayed as a court-martial, but it was a hearing to determine whether there was sufficient evidence to move ahead with a court-martial. Mm-hmm. And he tells Dorothy that I know what I believe, and if I don't live by what I believe, I don't know how I'll live with myself. And those kinds of lines written by Schenken are very, very powerful, and they were powerful to Mel, and they were powerful to Andrew. And we talked about those. Mm-hmm. And Andrew wanted confirmation that this is the way this man thought and believed, and would he have been prepared to go to his death over his beliefs and over his love. And then this has led to Mel Gibson saying repeatedly, I thought I was going to make a war film of a battle that had never been chronicled on film before, the bloodiest of the South Pacific, and some say maybe one of the bloodiest battles of World War II. But I ended up making a love story. And using Mel Gibson's terms, Desmond is the demonstration of ultimate love, unconditional, for his country, his God, his family, his fellow men. And when you think about it, that transcends traditional religion.
Yeah.
It is the core of what we would hope that human beings could be.
Definitely.
This film and the themes in the film ring true, a clear bell. It's a clarion call to faith among the faith community,
Yeah. Much
less so among Seventh-day Adventists. I've participated in this showing to Catholics, to Mormons, to Methodists, to Presbyterians, to Episcopalians, Baptists, and you name it, evangelicals. Had some Quakers that have seen it who are pacifists.
Yeah.
And the response has been, there are themes of redemption, reconciliation. There is the issue of PTSD, which the DAV and VFW feel this movie will be the case study in PTSD, both for Desmond's father and for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie has presented the greatest opportunity for witness that's ever been presented to the Seventh-day Adventist Church since its existence.
Right.
Let me explain that. While I was in Australia, I stayed in the same hotel with Mr. Mechanic. And we were leaving the set, which was many miles away from the town where the hotel was. Going back to the hotel one evening, and Bill Mechanic looked over at me and says, you know, Charles, the DOS story is not going to be an Adventist story any much longer. And I said, right. He said, this movie will make DOS and his story a world legend. And I said, I agree with that. And then he asked me the $64,000 question. He said, Charles, is your church, he didn't say Seventh-day Adventist, he said, is your church prepared for the conversations and the opportunity for witness that this movie will present? And I thought about it for a minute, and he said, okay, he says, I think I know you well enough. I know what your answer is. And I said, I hope so, Bill, but I don't think so. I think this is going to hit them as a surprise, and unfortunately, they may not grasp the intense and readily available witness opportunity that's presented to them. He said, well, good luck. And so at the General Conference, I started, and the DOS Council has been attempting to raise interest in this, but we do have some interest. The church took the position that they did not want to promote the film, and I can understand that.
Right.
I've never urged that church members go to see the film, but it was 71 years ago that Desmond received the Medal of Honor. The story is not known by most of the millennials, or they don't know the accuracy of the accurate story, nor do they associate it with the integrity of leadership and the ethics of the Christian life. They just see it as an old story. And we have within the church a tradition that we don't go to movies. My only point is how do you witness to a story if you don't know the story, number one. Number two, we're not suggesting and have never suggesting that there are doctrinal or religious themes in the movie that lend themselves to immediate proselytizing.
Right.
But rather they are themes that start conversations with your neighbors when your neighbors say, oh, aren't you a Seventh-day Adventist? Or you're a Seventh-day Adventist. Did you ever hear DOS speak?
Mm-hmm.
Or you go to church on Saturday too. Or I know you were in the Army. Were you a non-combatant? Well, some of those questions make our Adventist brothers and sisters very uneasy, nervous. Those are conversations they don't want to become involved in. And yet, Pablo, we've had enormous response from the church.
Yeah.
We mounted a big social media program, had opportunity to present it to most of the communicators. I think you were at Denver,
yes,
right, for the
yes,
SAC?
Yes, that's where I saw it.
Yeah. And we have conference presidents, union presidents, pastors that absolutely get the message. In fact, this weekend, I am speaking, and they're showing The Conscientious Objector on three successive nights. The theater is a Art Deco 1916 vaudeville theater that has been converted to art films. Mm. 300 seats, and it's been completely subscribed for three nights.
Wow.
And that pastor and his personal ministries team has already passed out 3,000
wow.
of the It Is Written, Faith of Desmond Doss brochures written by John Bradshaw, and 1,000, 1,800, something, I don't remember the exact number, of the abbreviated book, mm-hmm. The Hero on Hacksaw Ridge. And Poland, Germany. This morning I just read to my wife all of the publishing houses that I've signed licenses for them to translate Redemption at Hacksaw mm-hmm. Ridge into their language. And it's now 10 from Norway, Finland, Italy, Spanish, and just finished one, a big one, a huge one. It's going to be translated into Mandarin for the Chinese, distributed in China, and also in Chinese as an audiobook. The Lord is causing the rocks to cry out. Brother Pablo, it makes chills run up and down my spine. And as Bill Mechanic says, he said it would be important to be able to acknowledge the individuals that were involved in making the movie. Mm-hmm. But he said, these nominations are as good as Golden Globes wins. They have more equity. They have more validity and credibility. He says they will always be part of the Hacksaw Ridge resume.
Oh, yeah.
But he says it will give this film legs. I have just completed about 3 weeks of discussions with one of the Army's senior military historians. They are putting together a historical exhibit for DOS at the Army Medical Museum in San Antonio. However, it is being sent out to all of the military colleges and training centers like the Army War College, the Command General Staff College, West Point, and it's going to be resource material, a case study in ethics, in integrity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the rocks crying out. Whether they agree or not with DOS's beliefs, they certainly understand the value of standing up for what you believe, regardless of the consequences, which DOS did. And that, as far as I'm concerned, is a message that it rings with evangelicals. It rings some of our best reviews, and I'm sure you've read mm-hmm. them. Are in the Catholic literature.
Wow.
And of course, Mel Gibson still has a lot of people that will never forgive him. Incidentally, in my conversations with him in Australia, mm-hmm. I was rather amazed at his candor. At the time of the filming, which was in the fall of 2015, he was in his 11th year of sobriety. He had been off from alcohol and drugs really since his anti-Semitic rant a decade earlier. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic every day. He says, I'm not unique in that. There are hundreds of thousands like me. But he says, alcohol and drugs disconnect my brain from good judgments. And he said, I did stupid things. He says, I have a lot of atonement to do. But he said, it is what it is, and either people accept that I'm changed or they don't. And my respect for him had always been pretty good as a director, as an actor, mm-hmm. but as an individual, he's very intense. he is.
Yeah, I think it was, to that effect, you know, it's brave of him to portray the problems that Desmond Doss's father had, you know, including alcoholism with that.
Well, he was trying to portray the PTSD, and alcohol is so much a part of an escape mechanism. They try to medicate themselves into submission.
Yeah.
And we know much, much more about Thomas Doss's PTSD than is represented in the movie or that it's written about by Herndon or Frances Doss in her book about her husband.
Mm-hmm.
A week ago, I took delivery of the pistol that's shown in the film where Thomas Doss threatened Bertha, and of course, that's not exactly the way it happened in real life, but the pistol was definitely. The Desmond Doss Council has acquired that pistol, and it was, and we will, because it's an important piece of the history, and we probably will provide it some sort of a long-term loan arrangement with the Doss exhibit at the Charles Coolidge Medal of Honor Museum Center in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. There is a very, very excellent exhibit there. They have a very good archivist, and it will be, the original Medal of Honor that was given to Doss by Truman. Desmond and Dorothy signed that medal over to the museum in 1990, just before she died. She died in 91. Mm-hmm. The Doss Council is serious about preserving not only the history, but the legacy. And because we think it's an important piece of not Adventist history, but of military history.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's impacting society.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Well, thank you for allowing me to. I've been long-winded, but I'm finding it more and more difficult to take something that has spanned 13 years and reducing it down into four or five comments, especially for people that know some of the backstory.
Right, yeah.
But thank you for trying to get it out there and letting our people be aware of it and somehow convey to them that there's lots of resources that are available, and we hope they use them, and we hope their witness is positive.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever we do as a church, the witnesses going forward, I know of big mega churches that are having small group meetings based on the themes that are in the movie.
Mm.
And that's pretty
that
awesome.
That is really awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, sir. Again.
All right, Pablo.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to The Advance. Please join us next time.